Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave. This is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 224. It's the week of March 31st, 2016. Thanks for coming along. Got a great interview in this show. My good friend Lummox from way back. Back in college, we were fraternity brothers. I've known him for so long, over, back before 1988, 1989 is when we met at school. He's an ultra runner now, and he agreed to be interviewed for the show. He's done some cool things here lately, and it's just been a great story. There's a lot more to the Lummox story that's in the podcast, only because we've been friends for so long, and I'm so proud to know him and so proud to know that he's an ultra runner now. I can't wait to do a race with him. But this is a great interview. I hope you enjoy it. We're going to bypass the email bag section of the show this week, and we'll get that in the next show because of the length of the interview. Hope you enjoy it.
Talk show. Recorded live.
All right, this is Ashland Dave, and we are happy to have Lummox on the line for an interview on the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. And Lummox is actually an old friend of mine from college, and his real name is Jim, but he got a nickname in college of Lummox, and that's spelled L-U-M-M-O-X, and there's been a lot of debate over the years exactly what that means, but maybe Jim can get into that. But Jim, love to have you along. The first time you've been interviewed on the podcast, maybe the first time you've been interviewed about your running in general. And I'd like to thank you for taking the time to be interviewed. How are you doing this evening?
All right. Long-time listener, first-time interviewer.
Yeah, well done. So you kind of got into running a little bit later in life. And recently you finished an ultra, and that's really the reason for the interview. It was a pretty good finish on your part. You did the Hat 50K up in Maryland, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the interview. But why don't you share with the listeners a little bit how long you've been running, how you got into doing the long-distance stuff.
Okay. I started just after I turned 40. I was not feeling real well, and really the reason I got into running was actually you, Dave. I was watching you climb up the ranks as far as distance goes, and I remember when you came up to Annapolis to do a 10-miler with another mutual friend of ours, and it was something that I never said I would do, run 10 miles at one time.
That's the Annapolis 10-miler?
Right. And that was just crazy. That was very early in your running career. And up to when I was 40 years old, I would only run if something was chasing me. And I saw you starting to enjoy it. And I had another friend who's a mega ultra runner, and he's done several long distance races. And he kind of tutored me here and there, and I can remember running my first mile, being as winded as I was running 30 now, and going up to his house, and he kind of coached me along to longer distances, and I saw what you were achieving through these longer distance runs and decided to try a marathon, and you ran my first marathon with me. That was the Baltimore.
And yeah, what year was that?
I think that was 2000. Was that 2006? I'm sorry.
When you and I ran together.
Yeah. That would have been 2009 or 10, I think.
I can't remember.
I can't remember. It seems like so long ago, but I've only been running for 5 or 6 years, really. So couldn't have been that long ago.
It had to have been probably 2011.
Probably 2011. That was a pretty strong finish. I felt pretty good after that, but I was sore, and it was one of those races where you felt your knees for days. And then more recently, I got into trail running and just completed my second 50K. I did the Rosaryville 50K last year in July, and I got a lot of plans to just keep running now, and I really enjoy it.
We'll get to the Rosaryville 50K here in a little bit, and then, of course, we'll talk about the Hat, which was your second attempt at that. So you've done, in reference to marathons, you've done one traditional distance marathon, or did you do a second one somewhere along the way?
I did two traditional marathons. The second one was a trail marathon called the Big Elk up in Elkton, and that was a pretty non-technical, probably medium technical trail race, and that was a good prep for, I did that in advance of the Rosaryville 50K last July. And so
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, yeah, that was a good race, and for anybody in the Maryland area, I highly recommend it. It's not real well advertised, and I kind of stumbled across it, but that was a good race, a very well run race, and a very nice trail.
Well, I have to say, a lot of people that listen to the podcast are marathon runners, and some are just half marathon runners. I don't want to use the word just half marathon runners because that's a beast in itself, depending on the conditions. But you kind of made the jump rather quickly. Traditionally, people who get into ultras kind of do numerous marathons, and for whatever reason, they move on to the longer distance for various reasons, and everybody's got their own reason. You just did two, and so what made you decide to make the jump from a traditional distance marathon up to an ultra at the 50K level, which is the lower distance of an ultra?
Well, I'll go back in time a little bit, and I can remember your first 50K, and you had done, oh gosh, I can't remember how many marathons at the time, and I remember exactly where we were when we were talking about it, and I can recall how nervous you were about doing a 50K, and I was trying to wrap my head around that, considering how many marathons you did, and I remember you talking, well, it's, you know, about 5 more miles, and you know, that's significant after you've done a marathon, and now you've done 50 and 60 milers in various conditions. But I think my jump was probably pretty rapid. I don't want to say I got impatient, but I just had different opportunities, and with my training level, and really with the speed that I run, which is painfully slow, but I figured I could do it. So. With these 50Ks, I'm towards the middle to the end, closer to the end, but there's not many people running. And so I thought that the jump wouldn't be that significant as far as my pace goes. So that was really the reason why I wanted to get into the greater distances, along with my end goal, that being a 50-miler maybe this November. Which,
oh, very good. Well, we'll definitely talk about that. I'll ask you about that towards the end of the interview. Well, I know that you don't have a group that you run with. I know you have Jim, your friend Jim that lives up there, that's done Vermont 100, various other 100 milers. I mean, a completely accomplished ultra runner. So who do you run with? You live up in the Annapolis area of Maryland. Who do you run with, and where do you do your training?
About 95% of my running really is solo. I may do a weekend long run with one or two people on occasion. There are a lot of running groups that are somewhat unorganized up here. You don't have to be members or anything, but you can still reap the benefits of having a course with, excuse me, that's my dog barking. You can still reap the benefits of having a course with coolers planted and a little mini unmanned aid station. So I have done that on occasion, but most of my running is really done with an iPod. I do a lot of books on tape, or audio books, I guess they're called now in the I world. So the majority of my running is really done alone, especially the greater distance runs beyond once I get on beyond 15 to 20 miles.
Now you live near the B&A trail up there, which is a Rails to Trails project, the Baltimore and Annapolis Trail. They have a marathon up there, and I know you live real close to that. Do you do your training on that, or do you do training through your neighborhood, or how do you get out there and do those longer distances?
I do maybe a little bit on the trail. I find the trail a little boring, so I branch out to roads and such. I find that a little bit more stimulating. One of the runs that I did prior to the Hat Run was along a road called Defense Highway, which crosses a river, and I had the opportunity to see 4 bald eagles just hanging out, and I got to observe them for a while. That was something to see in the morning. So I try and do a little bit more road running, as long as it's I find it safe, and there's a nice shoulder or a nice median you can run on. So really, I tend to avoid the trail just because it seems a little monotonous. If you have an end goal, for example, it's about right at 10 miles from my house to Annapolis. So if I want to get a solid 10 miles in, I can run to Annapolis, and I've done that before. But so I tend to stay off the B&A trail and stick to roads.
Or does somebody pick you up at the end of 10 miles, or do you have to turn around and run home?
Usually it's I've left a car there for one reason or another, and I've got to go pick the car up. So
why would you have left a car in Annapolis, Jim?
Well, various reasons. I'm a law-abiding citizen, and, you know, if I eat too much on occasion, I'm just too full to drive. So
there's full beverages with there's carbonated beverages.
Yeah, the heavily carbonated beverages on occasion, yes.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Rosary 50K. That was your first ultra. Why did you pick that? And it's a two-part question. Why did you pick that race? And why did you go ahead and decide to get into the ultra world? I mean, that's a whole different world than regular marathons with all the water stops every 2 miles and everybody cheering everybody on the course. I mean, ultras can be nobody there, hardly 5 people at the finish. They might clap for you. What was your experience with the Rosaryville, and why did you choose that one?
Well, it is exactly that. It's not your normal Baltimore Marathon or marathon-type atmosphere. It's very it's a lot of self-gratification, really. You might have one or two people waiting for you at the end, maybe friends or family, and that's about it. But there's no crowds. There's no fanfare. There's always somebody clapping for you, other runners or their families. But yeah, generally, I think when I finished Rosaryville, there were maybe 10 or 20 people, and they were all huddled in the pavilion. It was ungodly hot that day. And the reason I chose Rosaryville was last year I made an attempt at the Hat Run, and I got lost. I missed a trail marker and just went about 3 or 4 miles out of the way, and they have a 17-mile cutoff, so I didn't make the cutoff. And that really, really upset me that I wasn't able to finish that. So shortly after that, I signed up for Rosaryville in July. And in between, I guess about 3 or 4 weeks before Rosaryville is when I did the Big Elk Marathon. And I was wondering if that was a mistake at the time to run that distance before 50K. But it turned out to work out okay. And as far as getting into ultra running, I don't know if I consider myself an ultra runner yet, mostly because of my speed, but because I hang around different types of ultra runners, and I think about you, and to me, 5 more miles, I mean, it is significant. I realize it's significant, and I don't want to make it sound like it's easy, but to me, being an ultra runner would be doing probably a 50-plus miler, but so I'm kind of downgrading my classification as an ultra runner just having done a couple 50Ks.
Let me interject something in there. I agree with you on that. I'm not saying you're not an ultra runner. You certainly are. You're definitely a marathoner, and you're an ultra marathoner. Some people, there's some thought out there that a true ultra marathon is 50 miles, but keep in mind, there's a guy named Gary Cantrell that runs a race in Tennessee called the Strolling Gym 40, which is actually close to 42 miles or just over 41. And he's the one that runs the Barkley Marathons, and he is all about ultra running. And
right,
he puts on a 40 mile, and as far as he's concerned, that's an ultra marathon. And he marks on the course where there's 50K, and he calls 50 kilometers. So it's all a matter of perspective, but it sounds like you have that goal of running a 50, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But why did you choose to run a marathon or even an ultra marathon in July, which even in Maryland, I know it's hot as all get out.
Yeah, that was a particularly hot day, too. I think the heat index was over 100. And Rosaryville is, as I said, it's a lot less technical than the Hat Run. And I thought it would be, I'd heard from other runners, it's a pretty flat course, and it turned out to be pretty brutal just with the heat, but I'd never really had a problem or an issue with the heat, so that didn't really scare me a lot. And I'm a big sweater, but So I wasn't really intimidated by the heat too much. Just had to keep myself hydrated, and I was determined to complete a 50K last year just because of what happened at the Hat Run. So the Rosaryville was the first one that I had come across that was very close. So that's the reason I chose that one. They do have one in November as well, and I probably should have done that one instead, but the conditions were a lot more forgiving than doing the one in July. But anyway, I picked it and I finished it, and I think it was a little over 7 hours is what I finished in. So again, focusing on my ambling pace, but I did finish, and I felt great at the end, despite the lack of fanfare and everything that's associated with ultra running. It was very motivating, and I considered it a real achievement for me.
So your first marathon was Baltimore, which obviously the logistics were easy. I remember we got a ride that morning. Your wife drove us home after we partaked in the party. Maryland has great after-race parties. Even the Annapolis 10-miler has there's always, even though that finishes in the morning, they have beer. The Baltimore Marathon had beer, and then I don't know about the elk run. But at that point, I guess you had kind of figured out logistics. Did you drive to Rosaryville on your own? I know that's not close to your house. What were the logistics for that?
A 40-45-minute drive, and I drove myself. Unfortunately, they do not have a big after party there or any beer. So, and I meant to bring some of my own, but unfortunately I forgot. And I did drive myself to and from there. My wife met me at the finish though. So she joined me, for a post-race dinner or post-race lunch at, Bojangles. And which, and there's nothing better than fried chicken after an ultra. That's good stuff. I was able to drive myself with little difficulty. And I did the same thing at the Hat Run this year. I drove up. That's a little further away. That's about a little over an hour away. And I did remember to pack a few beers, but it was too cold to drink afterwards. It was just the condition just really deteriorated.
No, I can't believe you just said that out loud.
Yeah. I know.
You'd be ashamed of yourself. All right. Yeah. We'll take that up later.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's get back on point. All right. So we've talked about Rosaryville, and then let's talk about your DNF at the Hat a little bit. You said you got off course, and then what determined you to come back? What, based on your DNF on that, getting off course and getting lost, what made you determine to come back and finish that race?
Well, just because I felt like it had defeated me, and I just didn't want to let that trail defeat me. It's a very difficult trail, and I don't know how much credence people will put into this, but I've heard people that have run 50 milers say that it's as difficult as a 50 miler, just because I think it's over 7,000 feet in elevation, and you're running with wet feet. There's a few stream crossings. And I hit one point at the race where it was a flat gravel road. And it being my first trail run last year, this was in March, I was running just about the whole race with my head down. And so I was used to keeping my head down. I hit this flat gravel road. I felt great. And this was at about the 15-mile point. And I just put my head down and just started chugging. And just ran right past the trail marker and until I realized what I did. And I was so upset. I swore I was never going to run again. So not only did I have to turn around, but one of the more difficult parts of the course I had to face, which was these severe hill climbs, to get back to the 17-mile mark and to be disqualified, basically. In addition to that, the conditions of the course were really rough. There had been a fresh snowfall the night before, which had turned the whole course into mud. And so you're slogging up these hills, you're sliding all over the place, you're already sore. And when your feet slide out from under you, it makes it even worse and more frustrating. And you know you got to go home after you get to the checkpoint. But so that's really the reason that I wanted to come back and do it again because the course had beat me, and I didn't want to let that happen.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the recent success. I read your race report. It was outstanding. I'd love to post that at the ashlanddave.podbean.com website. I might do that. But I want to ask you a few things here. When you talk about the elevation of 7,200 feet, that's an elevation gain throughout the course because there's obviously no mountains that high in Maryland. But that's how it's measured. You go up, you're climbing that much. Of course, you're climbing. You didn't put how much elevation you descended, which is probably about the same, which wears your feet down. That's where your feet get wore down. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just as bad as going up, if not worse than going up, in my opinion, especially when on a muddy course.
So you talking about in the report, your chief concern was running with wet feet. That's obviously something that I deal with. Not so much in my most recent ultra. I've kind of learned that maybe that's not such a bad thing with me, but you were concerned about it. How did you deal with that? How did you, manage that? And I have to say, on a side note, I've known Jim for a long time, and I have never seen his feet. He does not allow his feet to be shown to anybody. So I know you have real feet, but so tell us about how you managed the wet feet.
Well, to your point, I like to keep my feet covered in case I need to run from something. I just want to make sure it's your primary defense of getting away from something that you don't want to be near. So I want to make sure they're covered and ready to go at any time. So what I did was I used two Toms, blister shield, and that seemed to work pretty good. I know a lot of people use heavy Vaseline or Vaseline-type ointments, and that seems to work as well. But the two Toms, I was worried about it getting wet, but it seemed to be okay. And I used some very high-wicking socks. The course of the hat run is 14 mile loops, another 3 or 4 miles at the beginning. And
you call that a beating in your race report?
Yeah, the 3 mile beating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in the 14-mile loops, you're crossing two different streams, and so you do have to cross them twice. And at the 17-mile mark, having made the cutoff with about a half hour to spare, I sat down, and I changed my socks, put some more blister shield on, and that was kind of futile because less than a mile into the second loop, you're crossing the stream again. And it's anywhere from ankle to almost knee deep in these streams.
How long are they? I mean, how wide are they? Do you have to wade through them, or are they just?
Oh yeah, you have to wade through them. They're not just little tiny streams. They're probably somewhere between 10 and 20 yards across. So you are going to get wet.
I think you sent me a video last year of someone going down in the water, and they were.
Oh yeah, a lot of people go down because the rocks are slippery, and they have somebody there telling people that some people get a little too enthusiastic about the crossing and end up completely in the water, and that's no fun at all in March.
That was one of those videos. The guy went all the way under, and it was crazy.
Yeah, and that's cold water. I apologize for my dog, but she's a little bit antsy here.
No need. All right, so you got the wet feet. You managed that.
Yeah, and so my feet were good at the end of the 31 miles, and my first thought was, okay, I got wet feet. Now how am I going to run another 20 miles? Because I'm thinking about the 50. So I was trying to imagine running another 19 or 20 miles in the same condition.
You would have an opportunity to switch that up.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was my chief concern, and it turned out to be fine. I didn't get a single blister, or I got a little bit of blackness, but
black toe.
Yeah, just a little bit, but not much.
I'm sitting here looking at mine. I got three black toes on my left foot, no toenail on the big toe, and I've got still a big blood blister that's drying out on my right foot, and that's from March 5th.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Well, I got baby feet, man. All right, you said the things got a little brutal. The weather turned south. What happened with the weather this year?
Well, it started out beautiful compared to last year. It was probably about 40 degrees, somewhere between 40 and probably about 40 to 45 degrees with a completely dry trail. And I was loving that despite the hills. And I got so warm, I ditched my jacket and my knit cap at the 17-mile mark. And the temperature and the conditions just went down within the first hour. And I was pretty miserable. I was cold, and it was sleeting and snowing, and so I was wet, and I was only wearing a visor. So that was just no protection on my head from all the water dripping from the trees. And, of course, the course started to get muddy again. So by the end of the race, I was cursing it again. But that was my own fault. I could have been comfortable if I left my hat and my jacket on, but I didn't expect the temperature to go down so rapidly. But that's the danger you face when you're running a race in double the time that the elite guys are finishing. But
oh, I don't worry about the elites, man. I'm such a middle of a packer, back of the packer, ordinary nobody. We're the ones that support the race with our money.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
They're all showered and doing whatever they do, these little skinny dudes, whatever you do as a skinny dude, when you've run, that in 4 hours or whatever it took them. So, all right, so you got to 28-mile mark. You put in your race report that the emotions of another finish kicked in. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that? Because that's – running an ultra marathon is or even a marathon, but we're talking about an ultra, is not – this is not an ordinary activity whatsoever. This is totally different than what people do. I mean, there are people that run a 10K and get a medal and think they've really achieved something, and they have for themselves. But we're talking about a totally different sport. 28-mile mark, you wrote the emotions of another finish kicked in. Take it from there.
Yeah, and I can remember about the same on Rosaryville. There was a point at Rosaryville where I had to just take a pause, and I blame the heat for that. And that was probably at about the, in between the 27 and 28 mile mark. And I can remember that at one point I wasn't quite sure that I was going to be able to go on, but I just took a pause and I kicked in. And in both races, both the Rosaryville and the hat run, I completely ignored the 26-mile mark. It was like it never occurred. And really the milestone for me was that 28-mile mark where you only had 3 or 4 miles left to go. And you really realize that you're going to do this. And you're dealing with cutoffs at the hat. So that was another thing that wasn't present at Rosaryville, where they didn't have any cutoffs there. So I had made all the cutoffs in the hat, and it was ultra exciting for me at that point that I'd made all the cutoffs and I'm actually going to finish the race and get my hat. So not only am I going to finish the race, I actually made it within cutoffs. And so, yeah, the emotions kicked in at about 28 miles. And I know 3 or 4 more miles after you've run 28 may seem like a lot, but after you've run 28, it's, yeah, you really know that you're going to finish. You don't have any pain, and your feet are wet, but there's no blisters, and you're like, I can do this. And so it's really an emotional feeling that you're going to have another race under your belt. And you think about, I was also thinking about my wife at the end, who's, I'm fortunate enough that my wife is still somewhat impressed with what I do, finishing these races. So she's seeing her be impressed is another thing that's really motivating.
Well, when you say the emotions of another finish, you're out there on the trail. Are you by yourself? Are you talking to anybody else? I mean, what are you thinking? What are you feeling?
By that time, I had fallen in with a group of about half a dozen people, and who were all cursing the course and the weather. And but I kind of. There's moments of silence, whether you're running with a group or not. And I was a little bit separated from them. And I was wearing, I do depend on music a lot. And I'm a big fan of music, and I find it very motivating. And I just kind of lose myself in music and think about the finish of the race. And For me, I didn't think it would be another emotional event, but it was almost the same feeling I had at Rosaryville. And
that's cool.
Yeah, it's a strange feeling to describe, but it really is an emotional thing for me. And that's something I never thought I would feel.
That's a new thing for you as an adult. I mean, after all these years, I've known
right.
you for so long. I've known you probably, well, I think I've known you over half your life, right?
Yeah, just yeah. about, yeah.
At
right.
this point, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And would you have thought when we were back in college at our fraternity house drinking beers, we'd ever be doing ultramarathons, man?
No. I was amazed at how you got into it. And that's one of the things that I think about often when I'm running, whether I'm listening to Ashlyn Dave's podcast or not, is your running and, you know, how it makes you feel and how much joy it brings you. Regardless of the pain that you're facing, it's just somebody asked my friend Jim, you know, why do you guys do this? And, you know, what makes it worth it? It's the finish. There's something about mm-hmm. crossing that finish line and realizing what you've achieved and what you did, and there's your emotions again.
Yeah, it's really cool, man.
And I'm really amazed and impressed with how much you've gotten into it, and again, you're just, as you said, middle of the pack, average nobody, but it does.
Oh, nobody even knows that I'm there. They don't even know I'm there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just a lot of self gratification.
It is. It's a selfish sport, but it's nice to share it with others. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about some of the food. You had. I've never been at a race where there's French fries. So go back to the 17 mile mark where you gave yourself a single fry, and then you finished up the race with hot dogs.
Hot dogs or fries? Yeah. The Hat Run has some amazing food, and they cater to both vegetarians and the carnivores. So I encourage anybody that. that is interested in a 50K.
You've never been accused of being a vegetarian.
No, I'm definitely not. I'm definitely a carnivore. So I use running also as another outlet to compensate for some of my vices. So that's another reason why I think I need to run. But I think it's a good race for everybody. And the food alone and the support that you get and the way the race is run, I encourage people that are thinking about doing a 50K to really look at this. It is very difficult, especially for a first 50K, at least in my opinion. It's pretty difficult with the hill climbs and the crossings and stream crossings and such. But the food at the aid stations is incredible. And of course, at the end, you've got fresh grilled hot dogs, and they've got a fryer right on site. So as cold as it was, the fries were still hot. They also have peanut butter and jelly and pierogies. They had pierogies at the aid station.
That's unbelievable.
In addition to your normal things, Skittles and things like that. But they also have jambalaya, and this is at the end, not at the aid stations, but at the very end, they have your choice of vegetarian or sausage jambalaya, which is also excellent.
So did you eat solid food during the course of the race, or do you?
No, I concentrated on my own. Yeah, for this one, I had read several things about fueling for a 50K, and they say you should probably eat some solid food. A lot of what I've read is that you can get by with just the goos. And I think I did the Rosaryville, I just did goos. And a couple, because of the heat, I did do some shot blocks with the extra salt. So that helped me from cramping up. I did see a lot of people cramping up on the Rosaryville.
Have you cramped ever?
No, I've never cramped. No, that's one thing I haven't experienced is cramping. And I do sweat a lot, so I try and maintain the salt load, but that's really all I did for the Rosaryville. For the 50K, I did treat myself to one French fry and hold on one second.
You got to get that dog squared away.
I know. I did treat myself to one French fry and a little peanut butter and jelly, which was really tasty during the race. And that was something that was a real treat, was they had these little peanut butter and jelly squares. So I did do that at one point during the race, and that seemed to be okay. Another thing that I tried that I hadn't tried before was I had a couple cups of Coke.
Yep, Jet Fuel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that really treated me pretty well. I was worried about what it would do, but it really does settle, or at least for me, it settled my stomach, and it definitely gives you a little boost, that's for sure. So I'm going to try and remember that in future races.
Yeah, the sugar in the Coke gets absorbed so quick in the stomach, and it gets right into your bloodstream and really gives you a jolt. Of course, you can crash from it if you don't get something else quick, but it's no, that's a good thing. They always have that at ultras. You'll see that at all ultras you do that are supported, or Mountain Dew. Some people say it has to be flat. It doesn't matter to me. And I'll say another thing, PB&Js, if those work for you, they work for me, and they work for me big time in a 50 miler. So let's move into that. You got a future goal, I know, of running a 50. You and I have talked a lot outside of the podcast. And, so what are your future goals? Let's just talk about the immediate goal. We've talked a little bit about the fall. One of these days, since you're doing ultras now, we're obviously going to do a run together. We have to. So what are you looking at? You said you were looking at something for November. And what specifically are you looking at?
Right. I'm aware of two races. There's one in Philadelphia, and there's one closer to here in Baltimore called the Stone Mill 50. And that's in November. I think the registration opens up in August, at the beginning of August. Which I was surprised.
All right, Stone Mill
50.
Did you send me, I think you sent me that link, but I'm going to write it down. Stone Mill 50. What's the one in Philly?
The one in Philly is called the Dirty German.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, but that would require an overnight stay, probably. So, I'm not sure that I'm probably going to concentrate more on the Stone Mill. And that's
your frugal.
Yeah. Well, it's close. And
give me a break.
Maybe I can drive myself to and from if you know.
Yeah, you might need 50 miles. You need a handler.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll talk about that. All you're getting there, man. So
yeah.
Stone Mill 50 is November. What's the Dirty German? When is that?
I know it's in the fall, but I'm not sure when. That might be. I think that's in October, actually.
Okay.
So. But I don't know too much about that. I did do more research on the Stone Mill 50.
All right, so you've finished your ultra in this month. What I can't remember the actual day that you said it was. I think it was, 3 weeks ago?
March 19th.
Okay, that was just so you, I guess, took a break?
I took a week off from running, and last weekend I had to drop a car off at the mechanics, and that's 6 miles away. So I dropped it off and ran back, and that was my introduction into running. And that felt pretty good. By the end of, the race was on a Saturday. Sunday and Monday were pretty rough. By Tuesday and Wednesday, I was fine. And I don't know if I've said this already, but I'm really amazed with the trail runs, how good my joints feel afterwards, or how good they don't feel. I don't feel any pain whatsoever in my joints, and I don't know if that's a result of the actual softer ground or the fact that you're forced to move a little slower, but your muscles hurt a lot worse, but the joints after a trail run are great. So I was probably back to almost 100% by Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, I can validate that, because after I did the Mississippi Trail 50, which was, you know, obviously 10 hours running plus, I was almost embarrassed that I took the week off from work, thinking I needed everything, all those days to recover. It wasn't a road ultra. A road ultra is going to tear you up. A trail ultra is going to, you might have some bruising from falling, which I'll ask you about in a second. But it's just a different beast. I mean, the surface is different. You're not running on concrete or asphalt. And that's why people do trails. I'm still in between. You know, I think I put out in the last podcast how I should, you know, embrace trails more. It's just, I don't know, I kind of like running from, putting my head down and running from point A to point B and not worrying about it. But did you go down at all in the mud, and how did you manage that?
No, but you definitely hit some stumps and you stumble, which is probably worse than falling, because trying to catch yourself just requires so much effort, and the pain in your muscles that you experience trying to keep yourself upright, and I'm sure most runners have experienced that. It's just brutal. And to know that you gotta keep
it's
going.
It's better just to hit the deck.
Sometimes it is. But yeah, I managed both, actually all three trail runs, all four trail runs, the Big Elk, the Hat, and twice in the Rosaryville, managed to get through them without falling. And I do run with a water bottle. That's kind of a security blanket of mine. So I don't have both hands entirely free, but I have to have my water bottle for whatever distance. And I know that people consider that extra weight, but like I said, I'm not going to break any records. I don't think it's going to slow me down.
And some races require it, but all right. Well, we talked about your future goals, and I'm sure we'll talk some more. You got any advice out there for any new ultra runners that are thinking about maybe going from the marathon distance up to a 50K? What do you think they should, I don't know, some simple things they should probably think about? A couple pieces of advice.
I guess the only advice that I would give, and I guess this goes against the competitive spirit, but is to slow down. And, you know, don't be afraid to walk up that hill, or just slow down, and you'll be surprised how far you can go. And back to the elite guys, I do have to give them some credit. I mean, on these trail runs, regardless of the conditions, how they do it, I just don't know how they can maintain their strides up and down these muddy hills. And it's pretty amazing.
They're magic. Yeah. They have magic. Yeah. And we don't see them. You don't see them because they're done when you're done, and they have some magic wand, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I did have a doctor tell me that, you know, I had some knee trouble a couple years back, and he told me straight up, he said, if you're looking for a doctor to tell you, that tells you you should be running marathons, you need to see somebody else. And so, I mean, obviously that didn't stop me, but again, I think
blathering idiots.
You just know your body when you're running, and to avoid injury, I think is paramount. And if you need to shave a half hour off your time to complete the race uninjured, I think that's something, that's a victory in and of itself.
I agree, man. Well, Jim, I'm proud of you, man. I've known you for a long time, and I really never thought you'd be in this situation. But after we ran Baltimore together, and that was just a great experience for me, and I know it was for you. We ran the whole race together, and he just kind of took it from there. And I'm really, really proud that you're doing this stuff, and I'm glad to have you in the ultra running community. I know. Look at that 50 miler. It's not that far away. You can do a lot of walking. You check the cutoffs. You know, pick a race that you can make. You get out there and you do it, and you just do some, you know, extraordinary stuff. And you know, what else can you say? I really appreciate you agreeing to come on the podcast, and we'll talk a bit in a second. But
thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, and thank you, Dave. And you are definitely an inspiration. So I do have to give you a lot of credit too.
It's nice of you to say. It's not really necessary, but I'm coming up there in a few weeks to go out on your boat, and you'll see how much inspiration I have.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll
drinking all
see.
Your beer.
Yeah.
All right, well, so I work on the audio with TalkShoe. It looks like it came in through one speaker only. So if it only came through one earbud, that's just the way it was for that interface. But it was a good interview with Lummix, and I appreciate you coming along. He's done some cool things, and I'm looking forward to running a race with him. I've known him for so long. I mean, so long. It's just, I can't believe he's an ultra runner now. It's really cool. This is Ashland Dave. I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia. We'll do the email bag section of the show because I got a lot of emails in the next episode. But I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running. And don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.